Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle and Rock Ledbetter. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Thank you so much for what you do for Red Rain Podcast, and you're a great friend. And the author of the Spurs Dynasty, for those of you Spurs fans or NBA fans, it's a wonderful book that Kyle just published. And you can Amazon it, do what you will if you want.
Available wherever you get books, so, and I've linked it in the description to this episode if you guys want to buy it.
Yeah. Good, fantastic. So, tantalizing game for the Cardinals yesterday. They had numerous chances to get a 2-game winning streak with Kyler back as quarterback, and unfortunately they didn't get it done. But there were some fascinating developments during the game that were unpredictable and on both ends. Like the Cardinals giving up 333 yards of offense in the first half and looking just brutally bad in pass coverage. We'll talk about that. But C.J. Stroud looking absolutely brilliant. And then the Cardinals, despite the Cardinals and Kyler Murray getting off to a huge start with – You know how Kyler loves to play in Texas. So the bomb to Rondale Moore, which was so reminiscent to me of the bombs that Kyler threw to Christian Kirk. If you recall the Jacksonville game, over the shoulder bomb at the same spot in that game to Kirk. What was extremely frustrating to me was that after that, that pass, we don't see Rondale Moore thrown to again in the entire game. So he has one target for 48 yards, a 48.0 average and a TD. And same old, same old. They used him twice on rushes for 6 yards more. It's just unbelievable, unthinkable. I mean, why not run those same great routes, the cross corner routes that Kyler was so good with Kirk on? Why weren't those being run? It's just unthinkable, that you've got this deep weapon. The other thing that bothered me was when the Cardinals got the ball back the next time, knowing how the Texans would have to play off now, worrying about the deep ball. They could have easily on first down thrown underneath to Moore on a simple 7-yard out pass or, a 7-yard stick or 10-yard stick. Instead, they throw a dink little screen that gets blown up. I just don't see Drew Petzing understanding, basic sort of football trends, is that when you back a team off, that's when you can come back after them. You've got to then can reestablish a short passing game to get those corners to start playing up again so that you can go back over the top. As a play caller, I'm just not really jiving with Drew Petzing and his offense. I think he's showing his inexperience and, just logical things you can do. I mean, when you back a team off right from the start, you've got a great opportunity there to keep attacking. And I have to say that was one of the worst 2-minute drills at the end of a game I've ever seen. Just god awful. And a sharp contrast to what we saw in week one with the 2-minute drill with Kyler, who willed the team to a win and with so much more intensity and urgency than what we saw yesterday. I was just like, if you're going to play a 2-minute drill to lose, that's how you do it. Very, very disappointing. And same old mistakes that Kyler was making last year in 2-minute and pressure situations. And the whole offense, I don't want to pin it all on Kyler. Kyler, admittedly, after the game, took onus of what went wrong. And I thought it was an impressive display of maturity from him and growth. So that's encouraging. I mean, Kyler holds himself to high standards, is holding himself to high standards. The question that I have about Kyler is that, and it dawned on me yesterday, is that all he's ever known with the Cardinals are head coaches that basically kiss his ass and don't hold him to the standards that, are just sort of ready to just give him whatever he wants. I was watching Russell Wilson, with Sean Payton. They've won like, what, 4 games in a row, and Russell Wilson is now being talked of as a comeback player of the year. It's just tantalizing to me that Kyler has not found himself in Arizona with a head coach yet who can really challenge him. I think the reason why Cliff and Kyler kind of had that rift was, I think it goes back to the Green Bay game. I think that Cliff was annoyed after the game that Kyler checked out of the plays that Cliff had called and that they blew up so badly, and approached Kyler about that. And I think Kyler took offense to it. That's my guess, because he and Cliff were never the same since after that game. Kyler would, what, win two games from that point on, 3 games in like a year and a half, or over a year. Just unbelievable to think how that just, how everything just crumbled like a house of cards. But I think in the past, I mean, this is what happens when you give too much too soon to players and too much autonomy, is it becomes an ego struggle and a sensitivity. It's almost as if, like, you can't challenge Kyler because he'll go into a shell or something, or you have to walk easy around him. I'd love to see Kyler with a coach who's really going to push him, and not give him, like a coach he'd really have to earn the respect of, and not be appointed just, And I know he wants to be thankful to Gannon and the coaching staff and everything. And I think he feels good about Drew Petzing and working with him. But there are aspects of Kyler's play and the offense yesterday that just don't match and fit. And and there were struggles that even a just solid quarterback should have been able to manage. Everyone wants to blame the offensive line. And I tweeted out, and I have this posted on the link here to the articles that Revenge of the Birds said, and I've said this before, is that Kyler is one of the hardest quarterbacks to block for, particularly in pass pro, because he never climbs up a pocket. So you don't really have a pocket. You have a launching point from where Kyler wants to throw it. And then you also have the difficult opportunity of not knowing, when you're blocking for him, which way Kyler's going to bail out of the pocket if he gets flushed. Is it going to be sideways or backwards? And like yesterday, when Kyler got that face mask called on him, you saw Paris Johnson Jr., worried about getting called for a holding, because this happens so fast when you're blocking a player that suddenly, oh, was Kyler coming my way? It's just a very, very difficult scenario for blockers, rather than the traditional knowing you're creating a pocket that that your quarterback's going to be able to climb into, and throw the football. Interestingly, yesterday I was watching Josh Dobbs. I missed the second half. I fell asleep, but in the first half, climbing a pocket in Minnesota that I did not see him do in Arizona. And Dobbs's poise in the pocket was very impressive, at least in that first half. I mean, they would not go on to win that game, and I don't know what happened in the second half, but Dobbs played a very impressive first half. And, you know, when you look at C.J. Stroud on one side, the disparity of what he brings to the pocket to Kyler on the other side, it's just, if you're not a, you know, Cardinals fan who loves Kyler, I think if you polled the United States of America, which quarterback you'd rather go with, I think Stroud would win pretty much unanimously. Now, he's off to a tremendous start, and the Cardinals defense put a little, you know, took a little of the romance out of that in the second half, which I want to talk about at length, which was amazing. As bad as the defense was in the first half, they were as better and good in the second half. But getting back to Kyler is that, you know, I'm not sure at this point whether, you know, a standard pro-style offense is right for him, whether he can run that. There were aspects of it in game one 2 weeks ago against the Falcons that looked like Kyler could handle. Yesterday, it just looked out of sorts a lot. And, you know, I don't know. I think this is one of the tantalizing decisions that, you know, the Cardinals have coming up, is that, you know, if they wind up at the top of this draft, next draft, and they've got a chance to address the quarterback position, based on what they're seeing from Kyler, you know, and knowing the kind of financial commitment they have to make to him going forward if they stick with him, it's a huge decision. I mean, Kyler is electrifying. He is a tremendous talent. He is, you know, but the thing about Kyler is, you know, over the last couple of years, he's been highly inconsistent. He's have difficulty under pressure. He's thrown a lot of third down passes away, short of the sticks or out of bounds. You know, he still keeps plays alive with his legs like no other. I'll say that. Even, well, you know, he and Lamar have set the gold standard for escapability and plays with their feet. I mean, Kyler, he made that great play yesterday, you know, where he's flushed to his right and did an inside out move, one of his patented boutique moves, and got all the way to the pylon for the touchdown. That was awesome. And, you know, Kyler is special, special in that way. But I don't think you're going to win a lot of games with Kyler trying to just pass exclusively from a launching point off the shotgun. I don't see it. I mean, I know he's going to make a lot of those plays, but I think he's going to incur the same kind of problems and issues that we've been seeing about batted balls, and how people try to contain him in those pockets, and then just inconsistent throws downfield. Like yesterday after the great throw to Moore, the underthrows to Hollywood Brown, which is mind-boggling in a way. Because Kyler had plenty of on deep passes, you can get those off virtually 99% of the time because you catch 1-2-3 step and then rocker step and let it go. I mean, you have to do that with a speed guy like Brown or Moore, or you're going to underthrow him, even Kyler. But this is where, you know, it gets, because you look at a guy like C.J. Stroud in such command of the pocket, and just picking people apart on all three levels. Short, intermediate, deep. You look at that and you wonder, you know, if there's a guy in the draft that can do that and consistently well, you know, maybe it'll be interesting to see how the evaluations of this year's quarterback class go, because there's some interesting guys like Michael Penix of Washington is having an unbelievable year. J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, who's, you know, a really fascinating talent, particularly on a run-heavy team like Michigan is, and how I think the way Petzing wants to be. You've got some other guys that, you know, Bo Nix is playing at a hugely high level in Oregon. How about Jalen Daniels? Oh, my God. He has just been amazing this year for LSU. I mean, he's a legit Heisman candidate, even though they've lost a couple of games. I mean, the guy has been playing lights out at the quarterback position. But, you know, the two that they mentioned most, Caleb Williams and Drake May, you know, are, you know, the teams are losing suddenly now, and they're not playing quite to the level that you would expect. But that happens with expectations and with, you know, teams that struggle down the stretch. You know, the Cardinals are going to have to weigh all of that if indeed they're going to do their due diligence on this year's quarterbacks. And the way that Monty Osford has been showing up to quarterback games during this season of college football, it kind of gives you a sense that they are taking a look, and a hard look. So the thing is, what I tweeted out about the offensive line is it's Kyler creates some problems for offensive linemen that, you know, scrambling type quarterbacks do, and more so in the sense that Kyler is loath to try to escape up the middle now. So if he's going to escape, it's going to be sideways or backwards. And, you know, ever since that Seattle game where he tried to escape up the middle and came down on his shoulder, he's been kind of reluctant to try to escape up the middle. That'd be a whole different ball game. Again, that would equate to climbing the pocket or trying to escape forward rather than laterally or backwards. And Kyler's a genius at it. He's fantastic. There's just so much talent there. But, you know, I think that you got to get Kyler more on the move, even from the shotgun, run sprint outs. You got to move that. You can't make it so easy for defenses just key on him from that one launching spot. And that's why it makes sense to at times play Kyler under center and have him bootleg and waggle, which you can bootleg and waggle from out of a shotgun as well. And you can move the pocket there, shift the pocket, and give Kyler better passing angles. The other thing is, which is really getting annoying, is the Cardinals short passing game, like get hot potato game. Every defense now is keyed into that. And they're just saying they do the same with Dobbs. You're just going to knock everything down. And the Cardinals just throw it regardless. They don't, the quarterback doesn't make an adjustment of like trying to take a few, you know, steps to their left if they're throwing left to create the passing lane. That's just not working. The other thing that's not working is every time Petzing calls a horizontal play, like these jet sweeps or whatever, it's like a 4 to 5 yard loss. I mean, and those have come at like poor times. I've felt poor calls at the time too. It's like when you got momentum, like it also bothered me too, you know, with the Cardinals having several chances to attack downfield to take the lead. They're just, you know, either dink or dunk or throw it, you know, under throw a long one. There's just no tacking the middle the way that they should. I mean, except with Dortch yesterday, thank goodness he got a you know, a chance finally in week 11. It's derelict coaching that that has happened. Absolutely derelict coaching. Because Dortch, you know, it's not the size of the fight, the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight and the dog. And Dortch is a dog. I mean, he ended up leading the team by a lot. Six receptions, 76 yards, 12.7, long of 31 on eight targets. It was the first time ever Kyler has thrown, you know, more than a couple times to Dortch in a game. Of the rare games that Dortch has appeared with Kyler on the field. That's a breakthrough. So,
yeah, because you know, the same kind of thing happened last year, right? Where Dortch, once the season was over and Kyler was out and they were rotating between David Blaus and Colt McCoy's, it was Greg Dortch getting the majority of the targets. And then he came back this year and wasn't in the offense. And now that they're at the back end of the season, he's getting involved in the offense again.
Yeah, and amazingly, I mean, apparently our coaches are analytics guys. I mean, Greg Dortch was number one in the NFL in average yards of separation last year. So, and Rondale Moore was like fourth. I mean, why you can't take advantage of guys like that? I mean, that's a huge thing. You know, this year Marquise Brown isn't separating the way you would expect. That's just mind numbing to me. And I tweeted out this morning, it's just unthinkable how out of sync that Kyler would be with his buddy and, you know, college, you know, superstar Marquise Brown. And I was wondering, and I asked this on Twitter, I just was wondering whether subconsciously Kyler's thinking about Marvin Harrison Jr. and being in a position for the Cardinals 2 years in a row to take his guy from Ohio State in the first round. You know, I can imagine he's had some conversations with Paris Johnson Jr. about Marvin Harrison. I mean, who wouldn't? And the fear being that if he hooks up big time with Hollywood, they'll sign Hollywood to the big deal and not draft Marvin Harrison Jr. if they had the chance to. What's interesting is, you know, SpotRack, who does the market value on free agents, like 3 weeks ago, had Marquise Brown listed at 18.5 million a year. I just looked it up a couple days ago, and it's now down to 14.5. Interesting. And I mean, I think in an ideal world for Kyler, he'd go crazy if the Cardinals could get Marvin Harrison Jr. and then find a way to keep Hollywood on a team-friendly deal, maybe even on a one-year deal, so that he can parlay that into, you know, a mega year deal, and then have Michael Wilson and Rondale Moore and Greg Dortch back. Wow, that would be quite a coup. So I can just imagine Kyler, you know, thinking, because I can't really explain how the week before against the Falcons, Kyler, the way he comported himself in the two-minute drill versus the way he looked yesterday was just night and day. I mean, yesterday he did all the same, reverted back into all the same mistakes he would make, you know, last year in pressure situations like that, where, you know, he can't get the play snapped. That one play where, you know, we're in the middle of the drill and it's like a minute and a half left, and the next snap comes at like the 50-second mark. It was just agonizing. It was just awful. I mean, and, you know, you're in a two-minute drill. You know, I mean, just the clock ticking. You have two timeouts, and you're just letting this run by, and he's motioning guys all around and changing the play on pre-snap and doing all the, you know, and it's down to 5-4-3. Oh my gosh, it's just agonizing. And you know, there comes a point where, you know, like this great guy, if you ever see, you know, Average is the New Normal, his graduation speech from this guy who at New York State Binghamton. It's on YouTube. It's hysterical. Where one of the things he said was that when he had a third roommate change in his freshman year, he said, coming to the realization that I might have been the problem. I mean, you know, I mean, if these are the same problems that everybody wanted to blame Cliff for, and now we're seeing again, I think you might have want to reassess what you were blaming Cliff for. And, you know, because if it's the same sort of thing from a player that you're seeing, this is, you know, something that I think he needs to own. And you know what? After the game, Kyler owned up to all of it. He said, you know, and I think that gives great hope moving forward for him, that he's, you know, he's handling the media really beautifully right now. And I'd like to see him really nail this thing down, you know, remove all doubt. Yesterday, any bit of doubts you might have had in the past crept back in because he just was not mentally and physically sharp passing the football. The way that we know he can be, and in making decisions. And as RO2B's Red Sea, our moderator and great fan, called the Cardinals offense under Dobbs the third and give up. Yesterday was the fourth and give up. Just brutal, brutally poor conceived and executed attempts on fourth down. The one that I will give a bit of a caveat to, or you know, recognition to, is where Greg Dortch does what you're coached to do, is come back to the football when it's thrown directly at you so that someone doesn't jump your passing lane. And if they do, they crash into you and you get a PI. That was unfortunate. But, okay, here's the thing, is that what you want to do is not, you know, if you're going to pass to this, if it's a fourth down, you've got to clearly devise a play that's beyond the sticks, that doesn't flirt with the sticks. I mean, you know, and unfortunately on that play, I mean, Dortch was triple covered. How about the play where he caught the ball on the sideline and maneuvered through three defenders? There were four defenders around Dortch when he caught that cross corner that was one of Christian Kirk's really good plays with Kyler. Dortch got it on that corner. Boy, oh boy. You know, look at the fight of the dog. You know, after he caught that ball, and you know, that was on his 31-yarder, where he's dragging defenders. You know, got to hand it to James Conner, 14 carries, 62 yards, 4.4. The guy is just such a baller. Interestingly, he only had 14 carries in this game, but of course, the Cardinals found themselves in a hole. You know, Trey McBride had, you know, 5 catches for 43 yards, 5 on 7 targets. The most disappointing of which was the missed fourth down opportunity where he was wide open, just like last week, coming over the middle. And, you know, there's a disconnect there. This time around, I mean, Kyler didn't, you know, Kyler owned up to it. He said it was a bad throw. Because he didn't get his feet right, and which is surprising, from, you know, from a situation like that. Marquise Brown, 5 targets, 2 catches, 18 yards in 2 games. He has like 4 catches for 39 yards. It's just unbelievable. I mean, we got 2 catches and 15 yards from Jeff Swaim, you know, on 2 targets. Tony Jones had that one catch for 11 yards. That was nice. Elijah Higgins with the tough. You know, I almost had that low pass. Like, again, why was that pass so low? You know, he had the penalty. But Higgins, I loved what he got after the catch on that. Obviously, he's got, you know, some yak ability yard after catch. So it was 214 yards on the, you know, with a 10.7 average per reception, with a long of 48, 20 of 20 of 30 from Kyler, which is 67%. You know, it wasn't a terrible day by any stretch, obviously, but, you know, then it came down to these fourth downs, and which were the difference of the game. Because, as people are rightfully pointing out, like Howard Balzer of Phoenix said this, and I think he's got a great point. If you go for the 2 points when you make it 21 to 16 and you fail, which Kyler did everything he could to try to get in the end zone on that play, and credit to him, then it doesn't make, you know, if you're trying to get within a field goal, then why not kick the field goal the next time down to make it 21-19? It puts all the pressure on the Texans because now they're a field goal away from losing. You know, you're just taking, that was 4 points taken off the board right there, when should have been easy points. Could have been 21-20, actually. And then with a chance down the stretch to kick a field goal to win it, like you did the week before. With all these fourth downs and goes on Gannon, you know, in the analytics or whatever, you know, sometimes you got to read the game the right way. And the way the thing game was trending was that, you know, suddenly the Cardinals' defense was pitching a shutout. I mean, all three times the Texans were down in scoring position. You know, the Cardinals intercepted. It was awesome. I mean, the real tone setter of the second half was Jalen Thompson, whose sack of C.J. Stroud was a game changer. I mean, Stroud was not quite the same after that. And of course, he had to come out for one play, which kind of rattled his cage a little bit. And then JT backed it up with that great end zone interception. I mean, what a turn in momentum. And then you had, then Hamilton helped, you know, on good coverage, gets a deflection into the arms of Chris Barnes, who played a really good game coming in there. I don't know why he hasn't been in there when he's active, because he's looked like the best inside linebacker we've had this season. And his PFF grades corroborate that. I mean, you know, he's number one highest grade coming into this week at 79.3. You know, there's some of the personnel decisions that Gannon makes I just cannot fathom. We've been watching Marco Wilson for 11 weeks and know that, you know, he's a liability at this point and know he's going to get picked on. Here's my issue with Wilson, and I have a huge issue with this, is he's a guy who has 4.4 speed, but he doesn't use it. I mean, the part of D-back play is, you know, you're going to be momentarily beaten because you can't predict which way your receiver is going to cut. But that's where, once the receiver makes the commitment, that's where you got to turn on the jets to, it's called recovering. So you got to recover in those situations. When I see Wilson, he gets beat off the first cut and is running 3/4 speed. He's not recovering, like, with urgency and, like, getting his, you know, he's just kind of going through the motions. I mean, he looks like a Washington General defender against the Harlem Globetrotters. It's just like mock coverage. It's not like bust my ass coverage. And that you need defensive backs to, okay, now I see where it's going. I'm going to bust my butt to get back to that passing lane and get back to, you know, having, be in a position to have a little bit of leverage. You're just not seeing, I mean, Tank Dell had him twisted around a few times. Tank Dell is forced to be reckoned with, and someone you really need to double team and have give help to. But, you know, Tank Dell's a guy you've got to play press on, in my opinion, and trail with a safety over the top. You can't let him, you know, in space twist you around the way he was doing. And credit CJ Stroud, who was just lights out in that first half to Dell. I mean, Dell ended up with 8 catches on 10 targets for 149 yards, 18.6 average and a TD. Dang. I mean, they had 338 yards passing offense. It's just a lot. But the Cardinal defense put the clamps on in the second half, and then Hamilton made that awesome interception for the third interception on the out pass. And kid came down with a groin. Just felt so bad. I mean, Lecky Fotu was having the best game of his career, and he gets a hand injury. I mean, Fotu had 4 tackles. All 4 were solo. 2 of them tackles for loss. He had a sack in there. He was playing the best football. And here's the thing about the Cardinals defense. The guys they've had inside have been playing fine. Roy Lopez, 5 tackles. They're all grading well, too, on PFF. Dante Stills had 4 tackles yesterday, 2 solo and a sack, and a tackle for loss. I mean, Kevin Strong had 2 tackles. These guys up front are playing inspired ball. I mean, Lecky Fotu, like I said, he was having his best game. Lopez had a really fine game. He got a quarterback hit in there. Unfortunately, we didn't get much off the edge players yesterday. We're losing contain. I mean, the first half was just a defensive meltdown that we saw in the second halves of games like this. The 49ers game at San Francisco was that way. I mean, it was just like nothing going right and the team not being able to adjust and, you know, just kind of getting tooled on. The greatest takeaway of this game is the fact that the Cardinals, whatever they discussed at halftime and whatever that was said, coin that and hold on to that because it worked. And that was a very encouraging thing. And this could have been, you know, a 40-point blowout. And
to back up your point there, Walter, the Cardinals did not force a punt in the game until 1 minute and 30 seconds left in the third quarter.
Correct. And the announcers were making a, you know, were pointing that out. Yeah, I mean, it was like basically looking like the San Francisco game where they're scoring every time they touch the football. There have been a few games like the Giants game at home, like scoring every time they touch the football in the second half. Well, the Cardinals reversed that. They gave it up in the first half and then shut them down in the second half. And that's an encouraging sign. And, you know,
yeah, and it was good because the Texans left 10 points on the field also during that stretch. The Cardinals were getting cooked because you had the Thompson interception in the end zone and the missed field goal.
Well, that was in the second half. So
yeah, I meant the stretch where they weren't punting. So first quarter through third quarter.
Those really helped too. But the fact that they're limited to a field goal was a huge factor as well. That was an accomplishment. Yeah, so, but, I mean, what was really bothersome in the first half, too, is like 3rd and 19 and they get a 20-yard out pass. I mean, that you cannot be serious. 3rd and 18 and they get a 20-yard hitch pass, wide receiver hitch pass, which, by the way, like two plays in a row, if you watch the pursuit from the Cardinals' inside linebackers, it was pathetic. I mean, from Kaiser White, who's supposed to be the captain and, you know, a fixture at Mike. I mean, if you watch those two plays, unfortunately, he ended up getting hurt later. An elbow, I think, or something, or a bicep. And I hate to see that. But, and Woods, too, on the other side. I mean, just no strong effort to react quickly and get to that football. I mean, just basically took themselves out of the play. Which White, when he's on, doesn't do that. It's just really weird with White. He played one of his better games last week, and now this week it was just reminiscent of him, how well he played versus the Cowboys, and then the following week does a pretty much a no-show versus the 49ers. Same thing this week where we beat the Falcons at home. We come back, and White mentally, physically was not the part. I mean, he's just not. And you rely on guys like that to get to the football in situations like that. So, I mean, those are agonizing. You have a team backed up and you just let them out so easily. And then so many of those passes were just to wide open guy. I mean, you're just giving. And that's the other thing with those two is they play, when they play zone, a guy comes into their area, they don't even cover him. I mean, yesterday, who was the guy over the middle? Robert Woods. Just stands, comes and stops right between the two of them, Woods and Kaiser White. Neither Woods nor White, they're standing there like cardboard boxes, cardboard figures, not even reacting. I mean, when you play a zone and a guy's in your zone, you play a man-to-man. Zones aren't just stay there and then, you know, run to the ball and make a tackle. You've got to cover people. It's just so agonizing and so disappointing. So that's why I, at this point, I don't know what to think of again in defense, because it's so erratic. And unfortunately, between what we saw in the first game and the second game offensively, it's just so erratic. Now, some of that could be said to, you know, these, you know, everybody's new and they're getting used to each other and they're, you know, but it's week 11. And Kyler's a veteran quarterback, should be able to. I mean, if Josh Dobbs can come in and win games for, you know, his team right off the bat without even practicing with him practically, you know, Kyler had so many golden opportunities that normally you would expect him to take advantage of that just didn't happen yesterday. It just makes you wonder, you know, where their heads are and whether this thing's ever really going to work. If it remains as volatile as this, but then you just have to say to yourself, you hang on to the encouraging signs of like how that defense, you know, created a shutout after basically giving up everything in the first half. And then, you know, how the offense came back in week one against the Falcons with a great one of the better 2 minute drills, perfectly managed time and clockwise, to suddenly a week later totally shitting the bed on a 2 minute drill. I mean, awfully. It was just awful. And also on situational play, which we'd expect so much more of, for the kind of things you work through in practice to have ready for down and distance plays in key critical situations. I think looking forward, you know, the Cardinals situation is interesting in the sense that I think right now, I think probably anything's still on the table. It would have to be, including a coaching change if need be. Even though you would think that Gannon would be fully protected by Austin Fort.
That's not necessarily the case. Jake Lazor said on Sunday that, you know, Frank Reich's the most likely coach to be fired at the end of the season, and he would be a one-and-done coach in Carolina. So it's not necessarily a given in these I mean, Carolina and the Cardinals have the two worst records in the league.
Right. And that's an interesting point because, first of all, just quickly to address Carolina, Steve Wilkes had won that whole locker room. All the players wanted him back. I mean, whenever time you have that, you know, and it's just, it's almost like the right feel of karma for what happened in Carolina, of like them just saying, the hell with Wilkes, we'll go with, you know, Reich. And, you know, it just makes you wonder where they would have been this year with Wilkes having them play as hard as they were playing last year at the end of the season. You know, but here's the thing, okay? If you're an offensive head coach hired because you're drafting a quarterback, number one, you better be showing, you know, that you were the guy for this. And unfortunately, the way Bryce Young has played and his slow development, you know, particularly being outplayed and way outshined by CJ Stroud. And then you get this, the whole thing of the, you know, there are reports that, you know, management wanted Young, but Reich wanted Stroud.
Those have been out there since April. Those have been out since April, too.
Right. You hear of this kind of stuff happening all the time. And you just, you know, like the Dolphins management wanted Tua, and Brian Flores wanted Justin Herbert. So, you know, you're handicapping a coach if you're not going to listen to him to begin with, who he wants. But also, if the fit isn't just right. I mean, it makes no sense to hire a coach who's not jiving with the guy you want him to jive with the most, right? So I apply this also to Gannon, because Steve Keim said this, and even though he's Steve Keim, you know, Keim knows this, has some things he says actually are very true. He said, and this is very true, if you hire a defensive head coach, he's got to be special in today's football. And, you know, I think the reasons are pretty obvious. But here the Cardinals hired a defensive coach, head coach, which was stunning, particularly because the main reason why Cliff Kingsbury got fired was the riff that he had with Kyler. So don't you hire a guy who's now going to take Kyler to a better place? Instead, you hire a defensive-minded head coach. So, but if he comes in like Cliff did, Cliff inherited the worst offense in the NFL. They draft Kyler, and Cliff and Kyler's impact on the offense was immediate. You know, they only won 5 games and tied 1 game their first year, but the upgrade in the offense was good enough to get Kyler Rookie of the Year. I mean, that was significant. They went from 32nd to 21st. If you can climb a third of the way up the ladder in the first year, that's really good. Okay? Now, people are arguing that, well, the Cardinals didn't spend that much money on defense, which doesn't make sense to me anyway. And it's, you know, and that their defense is void of talent. I disagree. There were a lot of high draft picks there that, for whatever reason, you know, maybe being that there were Steve Keim draft picks, these coaches haven't appeared interested in coaching. Or they're making big time changes, moving Zaven Collins to the edge. Zaven Collins' big impact on the game yesterday was 2 tackles, 1 solo. I mean, this is one of the biggest waste of talents I have ever seen as a football fan. It's a colossal waste of talent. And he's not, you know, getting to the quarterback from the edge. So you're not getting that out of him either. When you could have him inside rocking and socking the way that he did at Tulsa. And at times for the Cardinals, even if you go back to his first game as a rookie, where he was tackling Derrick Henry for losses, in tandem with J.J. Watt. It was awesome. Why you weren't building off of that? But Zaven Collins was then coached. No, you don't come forward. You stay back as a middle linebacker, like Jordan Hicks. I mean, whatever was going on there with Vance Joseph and inside linebackers and Billy Davis was just abominable. But Zaven Collins has that package of skills to be a Brian Urlacher type player at Mike. Kaiser White is at best a Will, and that's even pushing it because of his sleight of size. He's a converted safety. He's basically a strong safety playing Will there, but he covers better from Will. His coverage is even below 60% this year. I mean, here was Gannon's big hire, but I'm sorry. His PFF grade is below 60, and his coverage grade is 60.3. Nothing great. His run defense is 60.5. And then you look at the other side, the guy they love and keep playing like Marco Wilson and Josh Woods, his PFF grade is 45.1. His tackling grade is 31.1. His run defense grade is 37, is 42.1. I mean, which part of this isn't working do the coaches not understand? Whereas you finally get in Chris Barnes, and who's here's his line, and then it's not including yesterday, 79.3 overall, 71.7 run defense, 63.3 tackling, and 78.5 in coverage. I mean, they're blowing away those other two guys, but yet you play the other two guys. It's just unbelievable. And so you're not playing your best players, for one. For two is, look at the secondary yesterday. You have an experienced corner in Antonio Hamilton, who was the top cover corner on the team last year in the 60s, high 60s, and he had a really good PFF grade. You have Budda Baker and Jalen Thompson, and you have Marco Wilson in year four, who should be, and has the athletic ability to be a good cover corner, and of course he hasn't been. And you're not coaching him out of his doldrums either when you see what happened yesterday. I mean, then you've also, you've got a couple promising young players you can put in there too. That is not a sucky secondary. Now, there's not at all, they don't have a Derek Stingley Jr. the way the Texans do. But it's that should be a competent secondary. You've got two of the better safeties in the NFL, for one thing, and you've got, Antonio Hamilton, whose cover grade this year is 65.3. I mean, it's good. It's good. His overall grade is 64.3. His tackling is 70.2. I mean, so you're not void there, but Gannon's guy is Kaiser White. So, and if he's not getting the job done, it makes you question what he's doing. I mean, and also his guy is Josh Woods, both of whom are, not delivering as inside linebackers. The edge guys have been fine. I mean, the grades are good. Gardex at 77.0, Collins at 75.0. But I mean, Collins in 11 games has, in 10 games through, oh, now he had two yesterday. In 11 games has 23 tackles. I mean, excuse me. No, 20 tackles in 11 games. I mean, you cannot be serious. Some games he could have had 20 tackles in one game in this defense. I mean, Victor Dimakije, 71.5. He lost contain yesterday badly. That was not good. B.J. Ojulari, 69.9. I mean, the grades are good. Then you got Stills, 65.5, the rookie. Lopez, 64.6. I mean, you've got Budda Baker, 72.9. Jalen Thompson, 69.2. You got players here. And who do the Texans have that the Cardinals don't? They've got Stingley, obviously, and they have Anderson, Will Anderson, which is the big trade. Anderson made some impact plays in that game. So did Stingley, obviously, with the interception. But raise your hand right now if you can name three other of the Texans' defensive players. You know, the guy who came through huge for them yesterday was Cashman. Blake Cashman had 19 tackles. So here you have Zaven Collins with two tackles on the day. You have Blake Cashman with 19 tackles, 13 solo, one sack, a tackle for loss, and a pass defense, and two quarterback hits. What a day. I mean, anyone know who Blake Cashman was coming in yesterday? I don't think too many of you do. And if you're honest with yourself, you didn't know.
Wouldn't have been one of the three Texans that I would have tried to name on defense.
Right.
Is Christian Kirksey still there? That's me trying to think of three other Texans.
Right. So, and Anderson's line yesterday was two tackles, two solo with one sack. But both tackles tackle for loss, so it looked big. That's not a monster game. I mean, but it's still pretty decent. And the point is this. The Texans and Cardinals defenses were ranked at the bottom of the league last year. Kyle, give us the defensive team statistics comparing the Texans to the Cardinals this year.
Yeah, I've got four statistics here that I grabbed. The first one is passing yards allowed. And I'm doing averages per game because some teams have 10, some teams have 11. Kansas City and Philly have 9. So the Cardinals have allowed 349.5 yards per game. That's ninth most in the league, 24th. The Texans are 12th most in the league. I forgot to write down their number, but they're 21st in the NFL in yards allowed. In touchdowns allowed, the Arizona Cardinals have allowed 3 per game this year. That's tied for the second most in the league. And the Texans have allowed 2.2 touchdowns per game. That's tied for 14th with Cleveland and Atlanta. So they're basically right in the middle. Like
with Cleveland, whoa, wow, okay.
Yeah. Cleveland's number one in a lot of defensive metrics, but they are giving up a bunch of touchdowns. But they're basically dead smack in the middle. Opponent quarterback passer ratings, the Cardinals average 99.2, that ranks 27th out of 32 in the league. Houston is 92.7, which is the literal NFL average. But they ranked 22nd in the league in that statistic. In DVOA, which is a stat that takes game situation into account and stuff like that, the Cardinals have the 31st ranked defense and the Texans have the 17th ranked defense.
Huge difference, 17th to 31st. Both, they were the two defensive-minded head coaches hired this year. And there's no question.
Yeah, the Texans are average to below average in most statistics, and the Cardinals are essentially bottom eight in every statistic that we listed there. I know they're ninth in yards allowed, but they're basically bottom fourth in the league in every statistic.
And the Texans, with no expectations, are 6-4, 4-1 at home with a rookie quarterback and a solid defense.
And next week, they play the Jacksonville Jaguars in Houston for a chance to take first place in that division.
Correct. So, on the flip side, you've hired Jonathan Gannon. In DVOA, they're 31st in the league. And we've seen at times how that defense has been just flat out awful. I mean, for a whole half. And it's troubling. I mean, I think a lot of Cardinals fans who love Gannon love him because he loves Kyler. But if you look objectively at what he's doing defensively, there are serious question marks. I mean, there are reasons why Eagles fans who hold their coaches to the highest standards really fell out of favor with the guy. I mean, and I think we're watching some of them, you know, and, you know, every week there are decisions that are made that are just mind blowing. And, you know, like a simple decision of, you know, on third and shorts, you don't go into a, you don't drop in an extra lineman. So, I mean, it's an easy quarterback sneak to get it. I mean, I just don't get that. You know, just simple, you know, logical things that also the CBS crew pointed out yesterday that the Cardinals have the worst, give up the most in the red zone than any other team. You know, we've seen them. They have red zone struggles left and right. I mean, they don't cover well in the red zone. They don't defend as well. They had one great goal line stand this season, but other than that, they've just... So, I mean, if you're going to hire a defensive coach, minor head coach, and you're not any better on defense than you were last year, which we were 31st, in DVOA, what are we hiring a defensive coach for? And that's why, you know, everybody's saying, well, next year we'll get it fixed. I don't know about that. I mean, who wants to come and play for this defense?
And let me also add to your point there, Walter, about the red zone scoring allowed by the Cardinals. The Cardinals also allow an average of 4.5 attempts in the red zone per game. Which is not only 32nd in the league, the next closest team is Cincinnati at 3.9, which is, for those, you know, keeping track at home, I know it sounds like small numbers. That's a gigantic gap, like 0.6 red zone attempts per game versus any other team in the league is really bad.
Right. Yep. I agree. So, you know, we have yet to see again in defense play a whole game. They were better last week against the Falcons. You know, that was one of their better games and probably maybe even their best game. But then it makes no sense to come out versus the Texans if you're going to build off some momentum there and give up 333 yards in the first half and 21 points and get bailed out by a missed field goal. And, you know, you know, it was what it could have been every time that they touched the ball, they were going to score. But here's the thing is they did have some answers in that second half. So it gives you a bit of encouragement. Let's see how they can move this into the Rams game this week, which is a fascinating game to me because I think of any team Kyler has nightmares of, it's the Rams with Aaron Donald. Now, here's another thing. I mean, that Rams defense. Kyle, what's the Rams DVOA on defense? I mean, that's a totally rebuilt defense. They traded away all their best guys. Wagner was gone. Jalen Ramsey, they traded. I mean, they're starting like rookie corners. I mean, but the Rams have won four games. And, you know, their defense, Raheem Morris, you know, as a dang good coach, their defense played really well yesterday. Of course, they got the break of Geno Smith being knocked out of the game. And, but still, I mean, their defense hasn't been atrocious. It hasn't been as bad as the Cardinals.
Their and defense ranks 23rd in defensive DVOA.
You know, if the Cardinals were 23rd, we'd probably be around 500. I mean, possibly had a chance to win some more games, maybe not 500, but closer to it, maybe where the Rams are. Like, what are the Rams, 4-6?
4-6, which, by the way, the Rams are 13th in offensive DVOA, which was also where the Cardinals were when Josh Dobbs was their quarterback back in, I think, week 5. They were ranked 13th in offensive DVOA.
What are the Cardinals ranked now?
They're 27th. But that is an improvement, because I think they were 29th when they replaced Dobbs with Clayton Tune. So it has gone up since Kyler took over, but they peaked at 13th.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah, the defensive situation, I'm kind of leery of. I'm not even sure if Gannon's a true 3-4 guy and Rouse. I'm not sure I think they're probably better 4-3 guys. But you got all these outside linebackers who aren't really classic DNs. So, I don't know how they can change that now. I think might be better to get a more classic 34 coach in here. But we'll see, the Cardinals have their, I don't know if Cooper Kupp's going to play this week. He had an ankle issue in yesterday's game, but Nacua had a big game for them. Their tight ends usually bother us. Their running game usually bothers the off tackle. McVay running game usually bothers us. So that's a big test, on a Thanksgiving week. And for Kyler, to see if he can bounce back and the offense to bounce back against the Rams defense. That's pesky. They play hard. They get after you. They're more consistent than the Cardinals defense. So going in, I think you'd have to favor the Rams. And it'll be interesting to see how Kyler matches up against Matthew Stafford this time. And Stafford's had the better of him recently. So we'll see what happens there. It'll be interesting. And, we hope to see improvements and this and that. And, I think what gives me hope is that second half defensive performance, hold them to 82 yards and 0 points. That was a really great development in that game. Special teams were pretty good. The emergence of Dortch really excites me. But it'd be classic Cardinals to not even throw to him next week. If Michael Wilson's back, for example, or something. Hopefully that is not the case from here on in, because Dortch is a dog and we need him. And we need Kyler and Hollywood to start acting like Kyler and Hollywood. at least better like they were last year. They just still haven't connected on a deep shot as Cardinals. It's just weird. After all those great deep shots at Oklahoma, it's a different game. But what's encouraging too is the emergence of Dortch in the offense, and see if they can iron out. I think they need to go to a 2-minute drill, one time in the first half each game, just to go up tempo. Put it that way, get in a spread, go up tempo. They did that once in the Falcons game. I thought that really helped them for down the stretch. I didn't see them do it yesterday. And I think that Gannon has to reassess the scoring opportunities he's passing up when he's shunning field goals in what became a defensive game because of his guys responding in the second half. There's a lot of shoulda, coulda, wouldas. And I think clearly the way that game was trending, two field goals could have won you that game. Let's see how they can manage during a vacation week, holiday week, and go up against an NFC West rival like the Rams, who the Rams handled us pretty well in LA. So we'll see if they can avenge that one. Be interesting to see how the Cardinals respond to this and moving forward. But I think there are a lot of, I think at this point, I think it'd be hard to imagine that any decision for next year is concrete or been nailed down. I was hopeful that after the Falcon performance, Kyler Murray situation was gaining some clarity. But after this past week, it creates doubts again. Now, is it fair to Kyler to, this is his second game back, and there's, I mean, obviously it's to be determined, and we have to stay give Kyler a little bit of slack. And Kyler, after the game, was, said he took ownership of it. It's just, was something that happened, and they're going to iron out. So let's see if they iron it out. But that's the biggest decision that needs to be made moving forward, is whether Kyler, is the man moving forward for this staff or whatever staff. And then I think the other biggest decision is what you're going to do about Gannon as a head coach, because, it, particularly if his defense keeps, faltering the way that they have. If you hire a defensive coach, put it this way, Cliff arrived on the scene and, went from 32nd to 21st in 1 year, and then got two top tens in a row. Could we see that happening with Gannon? It's not happened yet. He's 31st. We were 31st last year. Okay. And guys have done more. Like I'm saying, that Texans defense, you could hardly name guys. They're just playing harder and better, as we saw yesterday. They're making big plays when you need to. And they're very aggressive, like their head coach. So, I mean, clearly, for them to be in the middle of the league in defense in 1 year, being one of the worst last year without D'Amico Ryans, is a feather in D'Amico Ryans' cap. At the same time, he's got an offense that's really performing. So in the case of Gannon, he's got a struggling offense and he's got a struggling defense. Getting this thing right is really important. What I still don't get is this comparison to Dan Campbell. I just don't get it at all. I mean, here's the other thing I saw yesterday. And I'm sorry, I don't want to feel this way about a new Cardinals head coach. I don't. But it's just staring me in the face. And I can't be a fan, be an honest fan, and not say it. I mean, yesterday when the defense was, calling timeouts, who's meeting with the defense? It's D'Amico Ryans. I mean, who's battening down the hatches? Matt Burke is his coordinator, but it's a tandem. But there's no doubt who's in charge of that defense. Yesterday, Gannon's not coaching on the sidelines, even remotely, the way that D'Amico Ryans is. That bothers me. It's just, like, what are you doing to be stand? I say it every week. I just don't get it. I mean, there's a team that out there that needs direction and energy. Now, he was animated when Kyler scored the TD, and that was great and everything. But head coaches aren't just cheerleaders on the sidelines. They've got to be different. When Pete Carroll always has his hand in both sides of the ball in the meetings on the sidelines. I mean, I expect more, and not seeing it. And it makes me, for a team that's struggling, it makes me question. And I hope all those questions can be answered by, the end of this season. But I think if they still keep getting compounded or keep continuing, it's going to get harder and harder to put trust in this coaching staff led by Gannon, and might get harder trusting that Kyler Murray's the guy to give that kind of money to moving forward. Those are the two hugest questions. And maybe they both work themselves out together. Who knows? Kyle, look into your crystal ball. What do you see happening?
That's funny that you use the word crystal ball, because I was gonna say, these next six games are not gonna be a crystal ball, okay? Like, there is no way that they will get a clear-cut 100%, this is what we should do evaluation out of these next 6 weeks or six games. It's just not going to happen. Like, no matter what the results, no matter what the performance is, the Cardinals are going to be going into this offseason with limited information about what they're going to do at the quarterback position. And this is where it takes their talent evaluators, the people who are making a lot of money, not as much as they should be making, but a lot of money in Monty Austin Fort and Dave Sears and guys doing the talent evaluation, to have some foresight and some vision for what they want this team to look like. Right. There's going to be limited information no matter what. This 6-game sample size is not enough to evaluate Kyler. Hell, we're 2 games into the 8-game sample size and people feel no more clear or less clear about how they feel about the future of the team based on those 2 games. So the 6-game sample size isn't going to be a revelatory crystal ball. The team is, like you said, 31st in defense, just letting from 25-yard line to opponents 15, just letting teams walk down the field. And right. Offensively, they can do all but so much, you know, like they've had strong moments. They've had weak moments over the first few weeks. And I don't think there's going to be any evaluation that's going to there's nothing I'm going to be able to see in 6 weeks that's going to make me look up and say, yes, I know exactly what the answer is going forward for the Cardinals. And fortunately, I don't have to answer those questions. It's got to take some foresight, some vision, and having a real plan from the people in the front office, because they're going to be working with limited information no matter what about whether or not to build around Kyler for this season, what their draft situation is going to look like next year, how they use the draft picks they have this year. Like there's going to be limited information no matter what. So it's going to take some foresight and some vision about what they want this team to look like. And it could go spectacularly wrong, like you're seeing with the Carolina Panthers right now. They had a vision and they struck out on the vision 9 games in because they are now talking about firing a coach and they're going to lose potentially the number one draft pick. Like they had a vision. It was a bad one, but they did have a vision. So as long as the Cardinals front office has a vision and they're willing to stake their reputation and stake this entire tenure on that vision, then I'd be happy with it, because they will not have the information to make the best decision based on these 6 weeks. If they don't have it made up already right now, I don't think there's going to be something they see in this next 6 weeks that's going to make it 100% one way or the other. It's just too much in the gray area already with limited information. The sample sizes are just too small to be able to do a major evaluation like this. So they're going to be flying blind a little bit. And this is why Austin Fort is being brought in as the general manager, is you got to have a vision about what the team is going to look like 2 years from now.
Okay. Well, I'm going to challenge you, Little Rock, because by the end of this season, I want a better response from you on that, more clear crystal ball. And I agree with you. Right now, I don't, you know, it's like looking into a snowball, a snow globe. You know, I mean, it's cloudy. There are a lot of moving parts to it, and it's hard to see through the snow on some of this as to what's going on. Are you up for it?
Am I up for it? Yes, I accept your challenge, Walter. I will come up with a 1 to 2 year plan for the Arizona Cardinals by the end of the season. Although I will say, if you're someone who's sitting on the fence right now, you're probably still going to be sitting on the fence at the end of the season, because there just won't be enough new information coming in over the next 6 weeks that's really going to sway your decision one way or the other about what way the Cardinals are going to go. You'll probably still be sitting on the fence at the end of the regular season. However, yes, I accept your challenge. I will come up with a 1 to 2 year plan for the Arizona Cardinals that we'll share sometime in January.
All right. Look into your crystal ball. All right. Thanksgiving week. I hope everybody has a great, wonderful time with your families and loved ones. Thanks to all of you for your support. Yeah, I really enjoy my time on Revenge of the Birds with all of my members there, my fellow members. and contributors. Special Thanksgiving to all of you. And to Kyle Ledbetter and his family, to you, and all of you who I'm interacting with on Twitter, and, you know, having great debates there with, same thing to you. Happy Thanksgiving. May the red rain of confetti of winning games at State Farm Stadium shower down into the red, red sea. Red rain.